The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Salah falls steam ahead. Mohamed Salah puts the ball into Origi!
Okay, let's face it, the Reds haven't needed to rely on a super sub of late to dig them out, but they're even special on that front when it's needed. Another demonstration of what Divock can do sent Liverpool top of the league at Molineux, or momentarily anyway. That plus Salah's contract and Harvey Elliott's rehab on the pod today. I'm Steve Hothersall, and on today's Red Agenda, James Pearce and Neil Jones from Goal.com, both of them down at Molineux for what was quite a sensational finish to a game. Divock, James, he just has that habit, doesn't he?
He certainly does, Steve. Yeah, it was another incredible chapter in a Liverpool story that you kind of you keep on thinking it's probably run its course, and then Divock Origi drags you back in and proves that he's still got so much left to offer. When you think of players in Liverpool's history that we've been lucky enough to witness, and you know, of course, there's been more, you know, obviously players with greater quality, players who have starred for longer periods. But I think when you look at players who have enjoyed such an array of spine-tingling moments, he's in a very, very elite group. I think when you look at, you know, he's only scored 39 goals for Liverpool, and I think, you know, he's been here since the summer of 2015. But so many of those goals have been important. So many of them have resonated, you know, right from, you know, you think about the goal against Everton in the 96th minute. You think about the two against Barcelona, the Champions League final in Madrid, the winner at Newcastle that took the title race down to the final day. And Saturday was another one for the collection. And yeah, Liverpool have been playing fantastically well recently. But I think, you know, quite often winning a game in that manner can actually do a lot more for you than winning by three or four.
Oh, absolutely. Mentally, absolutely superb. I haven't got the stats on this, Neil. I don't know whether you do. But how many games has he actually played? And what is his ratio? Do you know that?
I do, actually. Yeah. Luckily, I've got a piece coming out on him tomorrow. So I've had to do all this research. He's played 166 games for Liverpool. He's completed 90 minutes 25 times.
Wow.
In his time at Liverpool. He's played, that was his 100th substitute appearance. So he started 66 games. And in his time at the club, he started 34 Premier League games, which is remarkable, really, when you think about it. You know, I heard Danny Murphy and Jermaine Genus on Match of the Day 2 on Sunday saying, you know, why would you stay? You know, they were basically saying, if that was my lot, I'd have gone a long time ago. And it is remarkable. I mean, one of the lines I wrote was, you know, we talked about the century of Salah and Mane getting 100 Premier League goals this season, both reached that landmark. Divock reached 100 substitute appearances on Saturday. And when you look back, you think it was inevitable, wasn't it, that he was going to score? You think if ever there was a sort of a story there, that what would Divock Origi do on his 100th substitute appearance for Liverpool? Of course he was going to get a 94th, 95th minute winner. You know, it's just what he does. And I was actually sat next to James at Molineux, and I had David Lynch from the Sunday Mirror next to me. And when Virgil picked up the ball at the back, I sort of just said out loud, I said, 90 seconds left. You know, I had the clock in front of me, I said, 90 seconds left. And obviously, what, 10 seconds later, the ball's in the back of the net. You know, it's just, it's very Liverpool. It's very Divock Origi. It's very sort of apt, I think. And I was also thinking about this. I text, all three of us will know Neil Mellor quite well. And he was sort of the person I used to use as an example of, you know, not many appearances, not many goals, but always big moments, you know, sort of, as a ratio. And I think Divock has probably overtaken Neil Mellor in that sense of, you know, so many of his moments are memorable, vital, crucial, you know, spark these wild away ends or home ends. And he'll always be remembered by Liverpool fans, despite never probably getting in their best 11 at any point of his time at the club.
Which is the mad thing, isn't it? And actually, you know, as punters working in the press or fans, you're thinking, well, Jurgen must have given him some detailed information on the touchline, you know, press the fullback, do this or that. He just said, do a Divock, James.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing with Divock Origi is he does give you something new. I think I think as good as Liverpool's front three are, and you know it's really become front four, hasn't it, with how well Jota has adjusted to life at Liverpool. But Origi is different. He's not just a finisher. You know, he is, you know, a more physical presence. He holds the ball up well. He can bring players into play. You know, he can drop off short. He can burst in behind. You know, he is a nightmare, I think, for tiring defenders. When you look at his goals as well, I think 11 of his 39 for Liverpool have been scored after the 83rd minute. That's, you know, not far off a third of his goals in the latter stages of matches. And that's why he is such a great option to bring on. And yeah, I quite like that fact that you know, Divock said that Klopp kept it pretty basic in terms of just go out there and be Divock Origi and be a nuisance, put yourself about. You know, and he came up with the goods, and he made that look incredibly straightforward. I mean, I think it was a fantastic team goal. A little bit of a helping hand, you'd say, from an ex-Liverpool youngster in Kajana Hoover, who obviously gave the ball away and then, you know, left them slightly exposed. But the quality of the ball from Van Dijk was ludicrous, that crossfield pass. And then, you know, as for the first touch from Mo Salah to burst away from Hoover and pick Origi out. But even then, you know, to control with his right, spin and convert so clinically with his left was a special moment. And, you know, it was no secret that Origi, you know, would have left in the summer if Liverpool had a suitable offer for him. Klopp's admitted that, you know, a couple of times since, that he expected, you know, clubs to come in for him because he said, you know, he is such a, you know, in his head, such a gifted striker who deserves to be playing more. I think, you know, it's not very often you hear a manager say, like Klopp did at the weekend, you know, I really hope Divock Origi finds a manager who plays him much more than I do. But I think what we do know is he won't be going anywhere anytime soon. Because, you know, thank God he did stay put in the summer and that Liverpool didn't get an offer of around 15 to 20 million, which would have convinced them to sell. Because he's come back strong. And I think there was nothing wrong with people in the summer saying they thought the time was probably right for a parting of the ways, because Origi contributed very, very little last season. You can't get away from that. I think his only goal in all comps was the seventh in a 7-2 win at Lincoln. So I don't think anyone's backtracking and saying, you know, it's you know, we believed in him all along, because he had, his Anfield career had lurched alarmingly off track to the point where you thought it probably was beyond salvaging. But, you know, credit to him, because once those offers didn't come in, and the way he is with his such a relaxed, laid-back personality, he's not the kind of person that's going to go banging on Klopp's door and demanding a move. You know, he loves it at Liverpool. And, you know, it does take a certain type to, I guess, accept a bit part role. But he's come back really strong. And, you know, he's got himself back in the Belgium squad as well. You know, I think that was another sign of how far he'd fallen, the fact he wasn't even on the standby list for the Euros for Belgium. But he's back in the mix with that, you know, and yeah, scoring goals, assists as well so far this season. And his importance to Klopp is going to grow with the Africa Cup of Nations on the horizon.
Let's get into that idea of being a super sub, Neil. I'm a fan of David Fairclough, as a lot of people would be. Scored a brilliant Derby-winning goal in 76 when they went on to win the title. And of course, his Saint-Étienne moment. So he had those moments. But actually, latterly in life, and he released a book a couple of years ago called Super Sub, but actually, maybe if you went back 10 years, he wasn't always that fond of being known as a sub, was he? And I just wonder what the mentality is for a player like Divock Origi, and how you keep yourself, actually, mentally prepared after 7 years to still just be playing a bit part. You're a footballer. You want to play the whole game.
Yeah, it is difficult. I think, to be honest, we don't really know much about Divock Origi, you know, in terms of, because obviously he doesn't play have long periods. So when he's been in the side, we haven't really done many sort of mix zone interviews with him or that kind of thing, because he's not really in the mix zone or worth talking to in the mix zone, because he's been an unused sub, but he's been, you know, not in the squad. I might be wrong. I'm sure, James, did you do a sit down with him in America when we were over there a couple of years back?
Yeah, that was in the kind of the start of pre-season after the Champions League final, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and that's probably, you know, the one real interview I can remember sort of anyone doing with him where you might find out anything about him. We hear these little snippets about him in James Milner's book that he's, you know, Mr. Laid Back, and if there's a team meeting or a team meal, he just wanders in sort of 30 seconds before it's due to start. And it's quite apt, that, isn't it? You know, that he's sort of, he's never late, but he's just there at the right time, you know, just perfectly placed to just turn up and sit down and take his seat. But we don't know too much about him, so it's hard to get a handle on sort of what he is thinking. And I don't get the impression that he's particularly worried by anything, or that he thinks particularly deeply about his own situation. I think he just accepts things and just, you know, life is life, that kind of mentality. And in a way, it's sort of exactly what Jürgen would need, isn't it? You know, Jürgen's very loyal to players who do well for him. He'll never cut someone like Divock Origi adrift. He'll be fair to them. And if Divock was to come and say, look, I can't do this anymore. I need to get out of this club. You know, I can't sit here for another season and play in the League Cup and, you know, come on in dead rubber Champions League games or whatever. I need to go. I don't think Jürgen would say, no, you're under contract, you're staying, you know. I think he would be very fair to him. But also, by the same token, that means he's fair to players who are playing ahead of him. So Salah wants to play every minute. Mane wants to play every minute. He loves Firmino. Obviously, Jota's come in and done fantastically well since he signed. There's nothing he can give him more than what he's given him at the moment, I suppose. But that is ideal for Liverpool because it's not a problem. It's not a headache. It's just a player that it doesn't matter if he's out of the fold for one game, 2 games, 2 months, 6 months, a year, as he was. You know, he went on loan at one stage to Wolfsburg, and we never thought we'd see him again in a red shirt. And he comes back and makes a contribution, and that is, you know, that is priceless for a manager when you're trying to juggle a squad and juggle a team that's going to compete for Premier League, Champions League, and maybe more beyond.
I've had him in the Carlsberg Lounge a couple of times. Obviously, man of the match after the Everton goal and the Barcelona game. And I don't know him that well, but from what Milner said, absolutely spot on. He's so laid back, he is almost falling over. Do you think there's an element, James, of actually staying at Liverpool? He's looking at what they've won, the Champions League, the Premier League, they could win another one. Is that an incentive in any way? Does that make up for not playing full games of football? The idea that actually you can just add to your trophy cabinet?
Yeah, 100%. I think because he knows realistically, doesn't he, Divock Origi, that the day he leaves Liverpool, he'll be taking a step down. And you get some players who I think different types of personality in Origi's situation would 100% have left. They would have agitated, they would have pushed, they would have been a menace around the training ground, you know, because they wouldn't have been able to handle just, you know, because he's not a kid. What is he, 26 now? You know, it's just wouldn't be able to handle being given such a limited role. And even, even making big contributions and then going back to being a substitute. You know, it's not as even as if he knows that he could score, you know, for argument's sake. I imagine he'll probably start the game if he's fit against AC Milan on Tuesday night, and he could score a hat-trick. You know full well he isn't going to be starting against Aston Villa in the Premier League on Saturday. That's the situation he's in. For him, you know, it's always been about the bigger picture. You know, he loves being at Liverpool. He loves the city. I think you only have to look at, what was it, back in September, he linked up with the University of Liverpool, where he's now paying for two students, all their tuition fees, like a Divock Origi scholarship. I mean, I know people would say, well, it's only a little thing for someone who obviously earns a hell of a lot of money, but it's still the type of gesture that a lot of players don't really go down the route of. And I think it shows, you know, the bond that he does have with the place. And also, he will feel that love. You know, you only have to, you know, I don't think you need too many moments like he has on Saturday just to, like, remind you of, wow, what an incredible club to be a part of this is. And when you get that adulation from the fans, I mean, you know, yeah, he could, you know what, in a parallel universe, he would have been leading the line against Liverpool on Saturday because, you know, Liverpool did the deal with Wolves to sell him for 22 million quid 3.5 years ago. But he didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay and fight for his place. And, you know, he would have played a lot more if he'd gone elsewhere. But what would he have won? Probably nothing. He certainly wouldn't have his place in Anfield folklore, having won the Champions League and the Premier League. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how long it goes on for. Because I think there probably will come a time when surely other clubs do wake up and think, well, actually, and test that resolve with a decent-sized bid. I think probably COVID probably helped Liverpool a little bit in terms of the circumstances that led to him staying. Because I think probably in a non-COVID-affected transfer market, they probably would have got those kind of offers. But, thankfully he stayed put. And it's the thing with Divock Origi is I find him very frustrating at times because I think he's got everything you'd want in a centre-forward. Like, when you think back to when that first full season at Liverpool, 2015-16, you know, prior to being chopped down by Funes Mori in the Merseyside derby when he suffered that horrible ankle ligament injury, he was absolutely flying. You know, you're talking about a striker that started a World Cup quarter-final at the age of 18. You know, he hasn't really, I'd say, fulfilled his full potential yet. He has had these amazing moments along the way, and, you know, in footballing terms, he's still relatively young, and I really hope that he can go on and achieve more iconic moments.
Neil, list his moments 1 to 3 for you in importance, or 3 to 1. Let's do a countdown. Number three,
Everton. Number three.
Ooh, third, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a league game in December, isn't it? I mean, it was...
It was great.
It's the funniest. It's the funniest, and it's the... you know, it's the one... It might be the one I enjoyed at the time the most, because obviously it was... You knew it was a match winner, you know, but importance, I think it's number three, which it says it all, really, doesn't it? Yeah. Merseyside derby winner, Cop End, 94th minute, number three. Number two would be the Champions League final goal, because obviously it was a great moment in terms of the... You know, you knew it was done when he'd done it, but they probably still would have won without it. So I'll give that number two. Fantastic. You know, it was one of those let-offs, obviously, that thank God for that, really. And then number one would be the Barca game, because obviously, you know, look, that is... I don't think that'll ever be topped as an Anfield moment for me, or an Anfield night for me. The fact that 3-0 down, Lionel Messi playing against you, Mo Salah out, Bobby Firmino out, Andy Robertson off half-time, 4-0. And the manner in which it came as well, with this corner sort of out of nowhere, no one expecting it. What would you write on his sort of his Anfield obituary when he leaves? I think it would be Steve Hunter's iconic line of corner taken quickly, Origi.
What about the bigger picture of all this? It's a shame Simon Hughes isn't on the pod today, because we know how many months he chunted on about that Aston Villa game a couple of seasons ago, James, and it does feel a little bit like one of those moments, doesn't it, this season?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that was that win at Villa Park in the title winning season was probably in everyone's minds after that late drama at Molineux, because I think those moments can just be so big in the context of a season. I didn't think Liverpool played particularly poorly on the day. I thought you know, they created more than enough chances to win the game. They weren't at their fluent best, but I think there were reasons for that, with the wind was whipping around Molineux, and you know, they're not an easy team to face. You know, I think that you can't just expect to go and just roll over teams. I think, you know, what, they 7th or 8th in the league before the weekend, Wolves, and they were set up very negatively. You know, you'd have to say that in terms of, you know, for a team at home in the top half of the table, they looked so scared about what Liverpool could have done to them that, you know, they didn't really try and ask too many questions of Liverpool, because they were so worried about leaving space to exploit, and they became very difficult to break down. But you know, I think probably the most relieved man inside Molineux after would have been Diogo Jota after you know, one of the most extraordinary misses I think you'll see certainly this season and for many a season, because I don't know what was going through his head. Maybe because it was his old club, maybe he felt the need to just absolutely hammer it home with a flourish. But you know, when you look at some of the still frames of that position he was in, when, you know, the keeper stranded so much of the net to aim at, to just hammer the ball against Connor Cody in the way he did, I mean, the feelings are just very different, aren't they? Because can you imagine coming away from there on Saturday night, and me and Neil travelled back together, and it was one of the most hairy, horrible journeys back from an away game I think I've ever had, with one of those ones where, you know, you're aquaplaning up the M6 and the your windscreen wipers are on full whack, and you could still can't see, with HGV lorries throwing water up on at you, and imagine if that had ended goalless, and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, that Jota chance, 2 points, it would have felt like a defeat. And then the flip side of that is when, you know, when you get a moment like that, it's twofold as well, isn't it? Because it's what it does for Liverpool in terms of, you know, that they would have absolutely, you know, the mood in the dressing room after would have been absolutely buzzing. You know, it's same at Kirby today, walking back into work on the back of that. And also what it does to Liverpool's rivals, because you can guarantee that, like, for Chelsea and City especially, you know, they would have been following that. And then, 93rd, 94th minute, Liverpool still drawing at Wolves. And then bang, you know, it's like, you know, that was the Liverpool of the title winning season. You know, obviously the true value of it we'll only know come May, but it felt massive.
Yeah, it feels like it could be a critical moment, doesn't it? Let's talk a little bit on Mo Salah. So he did an interview with Egyptian TV, and essentially they've obviously asked him about his contract again, haven't they, Neil? And what was the quote? He said he's happy that a club like Barcelona show an interest in him, but he's happy at Liverpool. Then he went on to say something which really sort of got the cogs turning. He reaffirmed that the decision isn't up to him. He'd like to stay. The decision is in the hands of the Liverpool management. So yet again, he's thrown this grenade over, hasn't he, to the Liverpool hierarchy.
Yeah, I mean, he's only reiterated what he said before. You know, I want to stay. I think he played lip service to Barcelona, really, didn't he? I think he said, yeah, lovely to be linked with a club like Barcelona, but I want to stay in the Premier League. He said that's the best league in the world. I mean, let's be
fair.
But
it's going on, isn't it, Neil? Goodness me. Yeah,
of course it is. Listen, you know, the one thing that's clear is the longer it goes on, Mo Salah's case is only getting stronger, isn't it, for whatever demands he has, because he's hardly gone off the boil or slowing down in terms of his form. So it's not doing him any harm the longer it goes on in terms of his negotiating position, because his form is incredible. But I think he made it clear he doesn't want to leave Liverpool. I think we've known that. He certainly won't be signing for Barcelona, because I don't think they could afford his plane ticket. Never mind his wages and his transfer fee, signing on fee, whatever it may be. So
or match his ambitions.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, exactly that. So I mean, it's difficult to see a situation where he does move to Barcelona or Real Madrid, to be perfectly honest, in this moment in time. But the longer it goes on, the more it gets filled by things like this. You know, we're talking about what can Liverpool do. It's clear the problem is what Liverpool are willing or able to offer him, what Mo wants. I still personally think there will be a resolution found at some point. I think they will come together, and I think they have to come together personally. I don't think how can a club like Liverpool, that's in a position that it's in at the moment, where it's on the cusp of winning big trophies, and I think will be for the next few years if it plays its cards right, how can it let the best player in the world, you know, I think he is, I think a lot of people would agree, how can they let him walk away from the club and go and perform the way he will perform for the next few years somewhere else? They can't do it. So I think there will be a resolution found, but I would speak for the entire Liverpool fan base and probably Mo and all his people. It'd be nice if it happened quite soon.
Yeah, we didn't learn anything new, James, did we? I mean, obviously, he added another assist in the game. So what's that, 9 assists, 19 goals out of 20 games? The ratio just keeps getting better.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's probably an underappreciated side of his game, that he is so much more than just a goal scorer. And the numbers certainly back that up. Yeah, I didn't think there was anything worrying or new in those latest comments. I think it was just a continuation of a theme, wasn't it, in terms of his stance all the way along has been that it's kind of like out of his hands, which I understand where he's coming from there, but it's not completely out of his hands, is he? Because he is part of the process in terms of the negotiating. And you know, we know with Mo Salah that, you know, yes, of course he's got people that do that talking on his behalf, but he also is integral to that. But yeah, as Neil said, you know, with every passing week, with every commanding performance he puts in, his hand just gets stronger. I agree that I think common sense at the moment dictates that some kind of resolution will come about, because you know, I think you also have to look at, well, what are his other options? You know, the Barcelona Real Madrid route, I'm just not convinced is there anymore in terms of how could they make that work financially, especially if, you know, as we're led to believe, you know, Mbappe would be Real Madrid bound next summer. You know, that only really leaves his option as PSG, you'd say, in terms of a move elsewhere. And you know, would he really want to go to PSG? He said himself, you know, the Premier League is the best league in the world and it's here I want to stay. And I think also you look at whether a player is, does he look happy? Does he look like he's content where he is? You know, is he got a manager that gets the best out of him? Is he adored by his teammates, the fan base? I just think, why would you possibly walk away from that? And I can understand why fans get a bit edgy and think, you know, why is it taking this long? But it's a negotiating process. He's still got, you know, 18 months left on his deal. Personally, I think the time to worry would be if we're still sat here discussing similar comments from Salah in May, because I think then suddenly you're in a situation then where he's entering his last year, and then it's like, well, hang on a minute. How would you even try and replace Mo Salah? You can't. He's absolutely irreplaceable. And by the same token, you can't just give him exactly whatever he wants, because you know, of course there's wage structures and everything else. But yeah, certainly the cost of it, trying to replace him, has to be factored into Liverpool's decision making, and let's hope they can get that done.
I was going to say, I think there's another factor there for Mo as well, is I would be looking at sort of Gini Wijnaldum and Philip Coutinho and saying, well, I would have thought they both thought, well, okay, I'm leaving Liverpool, but it'll all be great. You know, I'm going to this great club. I'd maybe even look at Messi going to PSG and Cristiano Ronaldo going to Manchester United, and you think, doesn't matter how good a player you are, you do still need the right situation around you. You need the right club. He knows he's got that at Liverpool. You know, he might not be completely happy with whatever they're offering him at the moment, or how long it's taken him to offer him, but he knows that the team's there that's going to enable him to flourish. It is a risk, no matter how good a player you are. If you change clubs at 29, 30, beyond, even the best in the world, the greatest players in the history of the game, or some of them, are still finding it difficult to adapt. So does he want to risk that? You know, he talks in that interview about the Ballon d'Or and how he's convinced he's the best player in the world, how he's adamant that he's going to win these awards one day. Personally, I think the best way, or the best chance he's got, is at Liverpool. I think it's a far likelier prospect of him staying at Liverpool and winning those awards than it is him going to wherever, Paris Saint-Germain or Bayern Munich or wherever it may be. So I think from his point of view as well, he's not soft, Mo Salah. He realises that if he wants to achieve all the things that he wants to achieve, there's a better chance of doing it at Anfield.
Salah and Mane both started against Porto, but with this last group game in Group B, Neil, are we likely to see more wholesale changes in this 11?
Yeah, I think there's a greater scope for it, obviously, with players coming back. So you think of the bench Saturday, you've got Milner, you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain came on for the last, obviously Divock came on, you've got Minamino unused, Konate, Nico Williams, Tsimikas. So I think there's more scope for Liverpool to make what you would call safe first team changes. You know, you're not putting out me, you and James into the back four and that kind of thing. So there is an opportunity there to make a sort of, to just do a first team rotation. Obviously you've got Naby Keita, Joe Gomez back in training as well. I think probably going to train later today at Kirby, and potential for them to play an hour maybe or be on the bench. So there is scope for that. I would expect probably Mane and Salah to be on the bench at best on Tuesday, and I think that makes sense with the fixtures coming up. You've got obviously Villa Saturday, you've got Newcastle, then there's obviously that run of games coming up to Christmas with Tottenham, Leicester, Chelsea all involved around that time as well, Leeds. So I think I would expect those two to be rested out. I'd be amazed if we saw Virgil, I'd be amazed if we saw Fabinho, Trent, maybe even Alisson as well in the starting lineup. But the good news for Liverpool is after that sort of period where they were struggling to find midfielders, they've now got the options to do it. They've obviously got good options back up in defence, so they do have the scope to do it. And they showed in the last round, didn't they? You know, they played Tyler Morton in midfield, they gave some games, obviously Tsimikas. Nico, I think, played the last game, didn't he, Porto? He started that as well. That they can still win Champions League games even with the replacements in. So I don't have too many concerns about whatever team Jürgen picks over in Milan.
And whilst it's been 5 out of 5, James, for Liverpool, the rest of the group, they've got a real tussle on their hands. There's something riding on this for AC Milan.
Yeah. I mean, it's gone down to the wire, hasn't it, for that second place in the group, I think. Certainly from Liverpool's perspective, it's just lovely to not be part of it, isn't it? To not have any late drama. I think we've had enough final day Champions League group games under Klopp where it felt like it was all or nothing. So yeah, to have 5 out of 5 on the board is fantastic. I think for Klopp it will be another balancing act where you can't just dismiss it, because there's still £2.5 million on the line for if Liverpool could make it 6 wins out of 6 in the group stage. But yeah, I think this one does feel different to Porto at home. I think just with the travelling as well, I just think, why would you, with the month that Liverpool have got coming up, what is it, I think 9 games in total in all comps, you don't want to be taking any stupid risks. And I think, I think what will probably influence Klopp is he's seen enough already this season to know that the trust is there, that he can put his faith in some of those fringe players and they won't let him down. You look at someone like Tyler Morton, I wouldn't have any concerns about chucking him in at the San Siro. As Neil said, Nico Williams, you'd have thought Costa Tsimikas would start as well. On the other side, Konate definitely needs another game, potentially Nat Phillips alongside him if Joe Gomez isn't quite ready yet, and obviously Oxlade, Origi. So that seems like the most obvious thing for me, because there's a pretty big game on the horizon against Villa on Saturday.
Right, let's finish the Red Agenda with a word on Harvey Elliott. James has written on it. I'm sure you've seen it, Neil. Have you read his piece? Basically, he's saying he's progressing really well, making rapid progress. He's obviously got a brilliant mentality about himself, Neil.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about old head on young shoulders, if you use that sort of phrase, which is, you know, a bit of a cliche in football, but I think Harvey Elliott is probably, if you look at that next to the dictionary, I think his face would be there, wouldn't it? I mean, he's absolutely worked his way into Liverpool fans' hearts, despite playing what, you know, four starts or something like that, yeah. Is it, in the Premier League? You know, it's remarkable. I think it's refreshing to see a young player that it's not. So Harvey Elliott's sort of profile is not about the flashy, you know, I want to show you all these nutmegs that I do, or, you know, like these sort of flashy bling cars, or what, you know, whatever it may be that you might say the trappings of a young footballer that we would associate. He just looks absolutely delighted that he's playing for Liverpool, and that he's sort of, you know, he can't believe his luck almost. How good's my life here? You know, like I get to wake up every morning and go on the exercise bike at Kirby and do me rehab. You know, he seems like he's grateful for it. And that's really refreshing, I think, for a young player, because we do associate, you know, footballers, rightly or wrongly, with getting carried away or, you know, believing their own hype or whatever it may be. For me, he just looks like he loves playing for Liverpool. And I think, you know, I know from my own Facebook and Twitter interactions, Liverpool fans can't wait to see him back playing for Liverpool. You know, they've been taken with him both as a player and as a person, and I think the sooner he's back, the better. But obviously, it's a tough injury. You know, you could see. We all saw the pictures. We all saw the footage when it happened. We knew it was going to be a long recovery for him. But you know, he doesn't seem to have let that affect him at all. He seems to be of the perfect mindset for someone who's recovering from an injury like that. And you know, hopefully, before the end of the season, we see him out there.
James, where's he up to in his rehab now? You know, what timescale are we expecting?
Yeah, but back out, obviously running at Kirby and doing really well. I think, you know, when you think it's 12 weeks now since that traumatic afternoon for him at Elland Road with the fractured dislocation of his left ankle. And I think the positive news from the people I've spoken to is, you know, the damage around the joint could have been a lot more severe. I think there isn't, you know, kind of one prognosis with an injury like this. They vary massively in terms of the damage done in terms of fractures and also ligament damage. And I think two things that struck me. One was the quality of the care and the medical expertise he got on the day being so crucial, with, you know, Chris Morgan, Liverpool's physio, and Jim Moxon, the club doctor, were, you know, they were on the scene within 7 seconds of him going down in agony. And within 20 seconds they'd put his ankle joint back in place. And I'm told that's huge in terms of limiting nerve damage and blood vessel damage. So that certainly helped him. And also, I think, you know, as Neil touched on before, his mentality, his professionalism and dedication to his rehab. Because, you know, I spoke to someone close to him who said that, you know, he hasn't moaned once in all those 12 weeks. So he sees every day as being one step closer to pulling on a Liverpool shirt again. And that's what's kept him going, I think. You know, clearly Klopp has played a part as well in terms of his pep talks, and also I think the number of senior players at Liverpool that love him and have looked out for him and given him advice, because of course, you know, there's no shortage of Liverpool players there, from Van Dijk to Gomez to Henderson, who have been through lengthy rehabs themselves. Because the nature of the injury, he's been working towards a kind of 4 to 5 month rehab program as opposed to 6 or 7 months. So I think, you know, definitive timescales are tricky because, you know, every step of the way, as they increase the intensity of the training load, you can have little minor setbacks. You know, I think, you know, there's some stiffness in the joint, which obviously is to be expected. So I don't think we can say with any certainty when we'll see him back yet. But, you know, certainly at some stage in January, back in team training is the target currently. And then obviously then it's just a case of how long does he need to get up to speed. But, you know, the prospect of having Harvey Elliott back available for, you know, maybe even the last 3 months of the season would be huge for Klopp.
Check out James's piece on The Athletic now. And a multitude of pieces that Neil's written on goal.com, which are all fabulous as well.
Thanks, Steve.
Give a shout out for that one. Thank you very much, Neil. James as well. That was your Red Agenda. Of course, the Milan game coming up. We'll be back later in the week to preview Gerrard's return with Aston Villa. See you then.